Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Prey Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 180 of Nerd Pride Radio. 180, the year 180. In fact, 2 weeks ago in the year 180. So March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, 180, Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius dies, ending the era of the five good emperors. Which, if you had never heard of that, there was five good emperors, Nerva, Trajan, Hadrian, Antonius Pius, and Marcus Aurelius. And the five of them were notable, some think, because all five of them had been put into power through adoption. They were not the blood children of the emperor before them, but rather they were the adopted sons who were chosen specifically because they were it was thought that they would make good leaders, etc. So that was the era of the five good emperors. And then, in 180, as Marcus Aurelius dies, who takes over? 18-year-old Commodus. See, that Commodus is the reason that the good emperor era is now over, because he was so horrible that he was the bad guy played by Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator. And in real life, he was assassinated at the age of 30, leading to the tumultuous year of five emperors. Yeah, we go from 83, 84 years of good emperors to Commodus, who ruins everything for everybody. And then when they finally get sick of him and they kill him, then yeah, they have five emperors in a year as people just assassinate, rise to power. It was miserable. So anyway, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I'm awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week, it's Caligula, or as I like to call him, Little Boots. All right. Before we get into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, that's right, it's time for yet another installment of our all-too-frequent segment, Mike Was Wicked Wrong! I'm actually wrong on two scores. Apparently I can't, at the end of the show, I can't tell you guys I love you anymore. I'm not allowed to say that. Yeah, I know. Sorry. It sucks. Because I was watching Jack's Films, and Jack's Films, he's a YouTuber. If you don't know Jack, then go watch him. He's cute. He's funny. Entertaining stuff. But one of his recent videos was entitled Lies That YouTubers Tell. And one of the number one lies that YouTubers tell is, I love you guys. And so therefore, I mean, I know I'm not a YouTuber, but, you know, still streaming content. And so among all the others, apparently Jack says I'm wrong and I'm lying. So I'm not going to be able to do that anymore, which makes me feel bad because I really liked that. But, oh well, time's up. Sorry. The other thing I was wrong about, and this just happened, I sold a car, Aiden's car, in fact. I don't know what he did with it, but he ran it off the side of the road. And when we got to it, it had two flat tires, and one of those flat tires, the rim was busted. And so, I don't even know what he could have hit because there was nothing there to hit. We don't know what happened. Anyway, the car's a piece of junk anyway. I mean, it's a 1994 Chrysler LeBaron convertible. There's holes in the roof that have been patched. The back window won't stay in place anymore, so there's an open spot where rain can get in. I mean, the thing is miserable. You can't lock the doors. You can't, I mean, it's just terrible. And so with these two tires, it's like, you know what? I'm done with it. I don't feel like going out and buying new rims and tires and putting new stuff on here and get, I don't want to do it. So I put it onto Facebook. I put it onto one of the trade groups on Facebook, and I said, okay, here it is. This is what I've got. Car is sitting by the side of the road. It's got two busted tires on it. If you can get it out of here, it is yours. Here's my price. And I wound up selling it for $250. Someone said, all right, no problem. I'll come by and get it. And now here's the problem I had is turns out that the car was on a salvage title, which I knew. I mean, that was, we claimed it on insurance when the hail put the holes in the roof. And they came in and said, yeah, we're not putting a new roof on that car. Come on. What are you, crazy? And so they said, look, we'll take it away from you for X amount of dollars. Or if you want to just keep it, we'll cut the amount back by like $35 and you can just keep the car. And we're like, okay, we'll do that. So we put it on a salvage title, which we've done with other vehicles before that. Yeah, it gets more damage on it than insurance will pay for, so they just pay us out, and we just drive it, and, you know, it's still serviceable. And I've never had any problem with driving on a salvage title. All I've ever known is that I go down to the courthouse, and they issue me a salvage title based on the insurance report, and I get my salvage title, and I keep driving the car. The insurance company still insures it for liability. I never have a problem with it. And so when I sold it, I had mentioned that it was totaled, but I didn't specifically say the words salvage title. And there was a mix-up with stuff. And anyway, they come back to us 2 weeks later, and they're like, well, we didn't realize this was on a salvage title. We never would have bought it if we'd known it was on a salvage title. And I'm like, well, what did you think you were getting? It's a car broken down by the side of the road. I said, if you can get it out of here, you can take it for $250. What kind of car did you think you were getting? And I got a little indignant about it. Not to their faces. To them, I was very polite. But on the inside, very indignant and clearly this woman was just stupid and just didn't know it. But, you know, look, I'm willing to work with them. I'm like, hey, no, don't worry. I can get the title thing straightened out. I'll go down, we'll get the right one. Because my problem is I've had two Chrysler LeBaron convertibles, red, 1994. I have two 1994 red Chrysler LeBaron convertibles. That's what I've technically owned three 1994 Chrysler LeBaron convertibles, but one of them never had a title because there's no engine in it. It doesn't actually. It was just for parts. But I've had two of these, and I wound up, the one is long gone, but for some reason I still have a copy of the old non-salvage title on that one, and that's the one that I accidentally gave them because I thought it was the right one out of my pack of titles. And I realized, oh crap, oh no, that's not the right one. Sorry about that. I'll go get the right one. We'll get this all straightened out. She's like, well, but at this point we don't want it because if it's on a salvage title, we never would have bought it in the first place. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll work with that then. But even though I'm trying to be nice about this, you guys know me, I'm trying to be nice. She's threatening a lawyer at this point, which, yeah, you're going to go put down a retainer for a lawyer for a $250 car. I'm sure that's exactly what you're planning on doing. But I get their point. And she's going on about how, well, you know, with a salvage title, then now they have to go get it inspected and they're going to have to do all this extra work to make sure that it's actually street legal. I'm like, it's already street legal, but, fine. You know what? It's no big deal. You guys don't want it. I'll take it back. I'll figure out something else to do with it. I'll just take it down to the recycling center and scrap it for steel or whatever. I don't care. It's not that big a deal to me. And so I took it back. But as it turns out, I'm so glad I wasn't rude to them because so much of me wanted to be so rude to them over this because they were just being weird. And as it turns out, I was completely wrong. That it turns out that in the state of Nebraska, even though I've never had a problem with a salvage title, that's because I've always owned the car and then had it trashed by the insurance company and then I pick up my salvage title. No, she was completely right. I'm 47 years old. I've done this for how many different cars? Apparently, I've never actually sold it on the salvage title. I always wind up just junking them because we drive them until they fall apart completely. But yeah, apparently on the salvage title, and you guys, I'm sure every single one of you knows this already, and you're like, Mike, what are you, an idiot? You can't just... I know. Well, I know that now. Apparently in the state of Nebraska, yeah, if you want to sell it on a salvage title, then the new owner has to go get it inspected and prove that it's actually roadworthy, and they have to pay for the inspection themselves. And I'm like, oh man, I feel bad. I'm so glad I wasn't shitty to them. Because imagine if I had, because I mean, the whole time I'm feeling all self-righteous and indignant. And I'm like, this woman is an idiot. I can't believe, what is her problem? She's just being stupid over nothing. But I didn't say any of that. I'm so glad I didn't, because I was wicked wrong. So, whew. All right, enough of that. Because now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into it, I'm going to start off with...
Don't know much about history.
That's right. It's time for the Unnamed History segment. And this time, I'm going to talk about Otzi, the Iceman. And I believe I've already done a segment on Otzi years ago. But I don't remember exactly when or how much I talked about. But the thing is that every time he comes up in the news, which is about every 2, 3, 4 years, there's always something new about him. And he just fascinates me. So here's the deal. Otzi is the dude who was found in the Alps. And he was found at about 2 miles up. This was a couple decades back that they found him. And he is not the oldest mummy we have, not the best preserved mummy we have, but he is the best preserved old mummy that we have, all right? So when you talk about this dude, he is 5,300 years old, and he was frozen in ice, and man, he stayed exactly like that for 5,300 years. That's pretty awesome, all right? This is a Bronze Age dude, And so he also, unlike Egyptian mummies and some other cultures' mummies, he was also preserved whole. They didn't do any prep work. It's not like they were removing internal organs. It's not like they were dumping anything in him to help preserve him. They did nothing except the guy fell over, died, froze, and then got covered by a glacier and stayed there for 5,300 years. So Otzi is pretty awesome. So
what are you talking about? I think I know what you're talking about.
Otzi the Iceman?
Oh,
I'm talking
about.
Cool.
Hold on. Let me go get my pizza rolls.
All right. Eli needs to go grab his pizza rolls and come join us because he's excited about Otzi the Iceman. So I'm going to give him just a second. Okay. Eli is here. Say hi, Eli.
Hey.
Uh-oh. No segue. We had a quick family interruption there, and now I don't remember where we left off. I know we're talking about Otzi. Well, I know we're talking about Otzi. I just couldn't.
Normally... You ended off at 5,000,000. 5,300. Million
5,300 years ago.
Okay, I can't say words.
Okay, that's okay. You don't have to. You can just eat your pizza rolls and drink your coffee and you'll be fine. All right. So, Otzi died 5,300 years ago, and dude was, and this is the thing, is that they keep examining more stuff about him, learning more things, and now it's not just all these physical details of him. We've known for a while that he was murdered, but now... It's like a case of CSI Neolithic. I don't know what actual age it is. Copper Age CSI. They've taken it like the world's coldest cold case. Because, see, he was frozen in a glacier. Cold case. Eli doesn't find me funny. But like one of their cold case files, and they're looking at all the evidence now and trying to reconstruct, the scene of the crime and reconstruct his last few days and the conditions of his murder. And it's just fascinating. All right, because Otzi himself, dude's 5'5", which was actually average for his time. So he's average height, weighs about 110 pounds.
So was he actually human, quickly, just asking?
Yes, he is Homo sapiens sapiens, yes.
Okay, so he wasn't like...
Like Martian, right. Or Homo habilis, or Homo erectus, or Homo...
I was saying, whatever.
Or Neanderthal?
The one that started with an M.
I don't remember.
Yeah, but I thought it may have been that, because that wasn't
no,
human.
No, he was human-human. So,
okay, so he was human-human.
And dude has strong legs, because apparently he did a ton of walking. This is the thing. And from, I believe it was, they identified this from the pollen on his clothes... They can tell that over the last 3 days, he had been up in the mountains at least 1.5 miles up, and then had descended all the way down to the valley floor, all right, where I assume he went down the mountain into a valley between mountains, where we assume there was some kind of settlement, village, something. He met up with other people there, and then hiked his way back out the next day, and he wound up, at the time of his death, he was 2 miles up, and that's where they found him. So over the course of 2 days, he descended from 1.5 miles up down the mountain and then climbed 2 miles back up to get out. And so, again, strong legs, lots of hiking, lots of walking, but this dude does not lift. Seriously, you even lift, bro? Does not lift. No upper body strength, no real...
Only leg day.
Yeah, this guy never missed leg day. And so Otzi, apparently, no real upper body strength. His hands were relatively soft, so he was not a manual laborer. He is not the kind of guy who did a lot of hard work with his hands and torso, because he just did not have the development there. So some kind of merchant, trader, something, we assume. But, you know, that's just a guess. But, I mean, he was well off. He had a copper axe on him, which a copper axe is worth a pretty penny in those days. And so that was an expensive item. His clothing was made up of furs that came off of at least 10 different animals, several of them not local to that region, so had to be traded for at some point. Clearly, the dude walked a lot, traveled a lot. So he was trading. He or people around him were trading with somebody. It may well have been him. Because, again, he's a walker, not a worker, and he had money. So we know that about him. Now, other than the wound that killed him, which was an arrow to the back, by the way, other than the wound that killed him, he had one other wound on his body. One of his hands had been cut by a knife, and it was cut all the way down to the bone, and it was onto the palm of his hand, and again, doing the CSI stuff, this was clearly a defensive wound. So somebody came at him with a knife, and he held up his hand to defend himself, and he wound up getting cut, again, cut down to the bone on that one hand. And I had a pretty nasty wound, too, that may have been, had it had a chance to heal, may have been permanently debilitating, but it didn't have a chance to heal because that happened a day or two before he died. So that probably happened, you know, just recently when he was at the valley floor in whatever settlement was down there. So somebody was pissed off at him. Somebody took a swing at him. He fought them off.
Quickly, when was the English language created?
Oh, God, the English language doesn't come around. The English language that you recognize, you wouldn't start recognizing English until about 500 years ago.
So,
and English itself is maybe 1,000 years old or 1,500 years old, so this is way before that.
Okay.
And he's down near Italy and Switzerland, and so so this would have been whoever was there before before the Romans, like the Etruscans, or before them, or I don't even know what the names of the people would be back then.
History was here, so...
No, this is prehistory.
So, but
we only have legends of people, because there was no written system back then to keep track. Well, or we were getting close to finally having a written system, but I think everything was oral tradition back then. I'm not sure. I'd have to look.
Well, about the cave drawings, that was written.
Yes, but that's not a writing system. That's pictograms. So it's different. Those were, and not like Egyptian hieroglyphics where the pictures actually became, had meanings for syllables and words and stuff like that. The early cave paintings are not considered writing because they are pure straight-up symbols in that if I draw a picture of a deer, it represents a deer. And if I draw a picture of a man, it represents a man. As opposed to later on writing systems, pictures and scratchings and markings can represent...
So a concrete poem doesn't count as a writing.
Right. Concrete poem is not true writing. That's exactly right. He's in the middle of his poetry unit right now, which we'll get to, by the way, in the next segment, because it's really cool. All right. So anyway... he has the defensive wounds. We got that far. And then he left town, or left the valley floor. I keep thinking of it as town in my head. But he leaves there, and he packs up. He gets all of his stuff around. He didn't appear to be in any hurry because he gets back up the mountain. He got up to where the spot where he died, and that's where he was making camp at 2 miles up. And the guy was clearly not in any hurry because he sat down, he built a fire, he cooked a meal, because we know everything he ate for the last 3 days before he died. And his last meal, he ate well. It was roasted ibex and other stuff. And
this guy just ate classical.
Yeah, he was good. He knew it. He had good stuff. He was well provisioned. And like I say, if whatever that defensive wound was, if he had caused trouble in town and he was on the run at this point, you know, a guy who's on the run doesn't pack up this well. A guy who's on the run doesn't sit down and make a fire in the mountains so that anybody who's looking for him can find him easily. He doesn't sit down and, I mean, he had other stuff on him that he could have eaten light. He could have gone with the nuts and the preserved stuff. But no, he sat down and cooked himself a meal, took his time, and we're guessing while he's sitting around his campfire, somebody shoots him in the back. And more than likely, from the upward angle of the arrow, someone shot him in the back from a lower angle. So someone was coming up the mountain behind him, found a vantage point, and just sniped him while he wasn't looking and left him there. It's also possible maybe they snuck up behind him and they got him while he was bending over. But the more likely scenario was he was sitting there around his fire and someone shot him from further down the mountain. And here's the thing that I find most interesting about this whole bit. Whoever murdered him was not in it for the money because they left all of his stuff. I mean, the furs he was wearing, he had a staff that was with him it was a staff that was being made into a longbow. It was clearly going to be a longbow, but the work wasn't finished on it yet. So he had that was worth money. He had his copper axe, which was worth money. He had stuff. He had provisions and clothing and equipment that was all worth a lot. So whoever killed him didn't take any of those things because whatever was going on at the time, this guy didn't want to have to show up back in town.
Wait. Maybe what? Quickly to with the poetry. Maybe he's the highwayman.
Yeah, okay. We'll get to the highwayman in just a minute. But I doubt it. Although, man, wouldn't that be romantic if that was Otzi's case?
Yeah.
All right. Again, whoever it was couldn't go showing up back in town with this nice copper axe because everyone would have known where it came from and he would have to go explaining himself and how. And so whoever killed him didn't want anyone to know that he committed the murder. This was clearly wanted to be done in secret, which makes it all that much more salacious.
So
this is a much juicier story.
Otzi was probably actually just a normal guy.
Oh, yeah. Otzi was. He was, I'm guessing, again, he was my personal take is that Otzi was some sort of trader, merchant, someone who made his living going from place to place and trading goods for what he needed. And that somewhere in that town, he pissed somebody off. Either he ripped them off in a trade or they thought they got ripped off. Or maybe he slept with somebody's wife or daughter and they were offended. Or maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe it was just a personal argument and he called some drunk guy a liar and the guy got offended. Who knows? And all of this, maybe Otzi's the asshole in all of this. Maybe he's this slick guy from out of town who shows up, causes trouble, and he got what he deserved. Or maybe he was a nice guy and he was a traitor who just happened to cross the wrong person. Who knows? Who knows? But, well, who knows? Nobody knows yet. But man, the way they keep picking up clues, I'm sure we'll have this whole story by the next time I have to report on this. Give another 2-3 years. I just find this guy fascinating. He is awesome. So that is my story of Otzi, at least for right now. All right, next up, Nerd Pride Book Report. How fast is the speed of light? I don't know. Did it say in the book? All right, I wish I had some kind of spiel to go with that, but hey, it's the Nerd Pride Book Report. I read something this week, so I'm going to tell you about it. And technically, it's not a book, or at least not a whole book.
It's technically a book.
It's a poem. It's a poem that came from a book of poems.
You need to change the name of this part of your podcast.
Well, you know what? Maybe when you have your own podcast, then you can name the segments whatever you want, young man.
Well, it's technically not a book. You can't say anything about it.
You know what? This is the section where I read things and then I tell about what I've read.
Why would you explain that then?
Well, I just did explain that. I've reported on comic books here before. That
counts. Those are books.
Are they? Graphic novels count as books?
Yes.
Okay, see?
In my sense, they do.
All right, no, we have it from the ultimate authority, so we're good. Yeah. So what did I read this week?
The Highwayman. We said something about it. We said something about it earlier. Now Dad's moving me closer to the mic.
Yes. Well, in fact, here. Hold on. Let me make some extra noise while I move the mic closer to him. There we go. All right. What is The Highwayman?
It's like Romeo and Juliet. The Highwayman is a guy who goes out to this inn where the innkeeper's beautiful daughter.
Oh, wait. Yeah, seriously. Now, I'm going to assume that all of you have read The Highwayman at some point, because it's a famous poem by Alfred Noyes. It was written in 1906, and it's really good and really moving. I assume most people got it in English class. Eli here is getting it in seventh grade. I assume everyone has gotten it in some poetry unit. Because as I've talked about before, I jumped around schools a lot. And so, from seventh grade to 12th grade, I was probably in six different schools. And so therefore, I didn't get to the full, six is an exaggeration.
It was
seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, four different schools. But anyway.
I'm hoping more than half of the people who listen to this are just saying, Mike, why didn't you learn this?
Yeah, well, exactly. So there's been times where there are certain things that everybody got in English class in 11th grade or 12th grade or whatever, and I didn't because instead I got Romeo and Juliet twice.
Sorry.
So
I'm opening a bag of chips. You can't judge me.
No, it's okay. You can be our Pat. That'll be awesome.
I'm Pat now. Wait, is Pat the Elias?
No, Pat is DM Darks, and
and
on his podcast, Pat, he needs to eat on a regular basis or else his blood sugar gets off,
so
he is constantly eating on his own podcast. It's kind of a thing. So you get to be Pat.
I'm just constantly eating because I don't have to gain any weight.
Right, he's constantly eating because he's 13 and he's rail thin, and he just packs away food nonstop 24 hours a day and never gains any weight.
So, no.
All right, stop it. Stop. At least don't crunch on the microphone. Good Lord. anyway, if you haven't read The Highwayman for some reason, the thing's only 12 stanzas long. Go look it up. It's on the internet. Look it up and read it right now.
If you put in Highwayman, you're going to just get the poem.
Yeah, you'll get the whole thing.
Yeah.
Go look it up now and read it. If you haven't read it before, go read it now, remind yourself of it, and then come back and listen to this. It'll take you 3 minutes, and it's worth your time.
Yeah.
I assume almost all of you are familiar with it. So.
I'm going to see who the author is, because he's a famous...
It's Alfred Noyes.
Oh, Alfred. Okay, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
I should have known.
I knew that part.
Okay, good.
So anyway, now, go ahead and finish out. You got as far as The Highwayman is a thief who is in love with the innkeeper's daughter. And it's kind of like Romeo and Juliet in a way. So what goes on?
So the highwayman goes to get something for her because they're in love. But Tim the dickler, as I call him.
Tim the ostler, the guy who works the horse stables at the inn. Tim
the boy who had a broken leg, who actually deserves to have a broken leg.
Yeah, oh, he's a jerk. Tim is in love with the innkeeper's daughter and jealous. And so therefore...
The highwayman doesn't know that Tim was listening, and he leaves to go get something for Bess. And while the highwayman is gone, King George's men show up and...
King George's men show up because...
Tim's a dick.
Yeah, because Tim ratted him out. Because Tim overheard them arranging a rendezvous.
I'm sorry if I'm swearing, but I hate Tim.
Oh, Tim's a dick.
In PE, we named a ball that wouldn't work for the life of us. We named it Tim and started saying we're beating Tim.
That's how much seventh graders got into this poem. All right, so anyway, so as a result, King George's men are there waiting for the highwayman when he's about to return. So what happens?
The men... Bess, they did this thing where they tied her hands to a musket, but she got the trigger and put it to her and shot herself to warn the highwayman to run away, and he heard it right before he was, at the door and rode off, and they thought he was gone, but he came back the next day and tried to kill all of them with a sword.
Right. Yeah, so Bess is tied up in such a way that the musket is nearby, and she can get her hands on the musket, but it's kind of pressed against her, so if she pulls the trigger, she shoots herself. But she chooses to do that because making that noise is the only way to warn the highwayman that there are people here. And so she successfully warns him. He runs away. Next day, he finds out what happened and realizes that she's dead, and so he goes charging in amongst the king's men, with his sword out looking to slay anyone he can get his hands on, and they shoot him dead like a dog in the streets. And it's very sad. And this poem, again, I've never read it before. And I was just overwhelmed. It's beautiful. It is a strikingly beautiful poem. The imagery in it is, it is dark and it is haunting, and the use of the imagery, again, it's always very dark imagery, and the uses of light within the poem to indicate light, to indicate hope, light to indicate death and ghostly. Anyway, it's just beautiful. And I fell in love with this poem the minute I read it, because he was supposed to be writing, well, he did write a critique of it, an analysis of it. That was his homework assignment. And so therefore, are you laughing because analysis has the word anal in it?
No, okay. I'm not saying that. Why do you think everything I assume with is going to become some penis joke or some...
Because you're a 13-year-old kid and you're related to Aiden.
I'm not Caleb!
Well, what about Aiden and Jacob? They were just as bad.
They're still as bad.
They are. They're still as bad. Never mind. I won't even ask you why you were laughing then.
So, because the repeating part.
Oh, that's right. His analysis. Because the poem also makes a very effective use of repetition. There are certain words and phrases that get repeated, and like right in a row, to highlight them. And he was very proud of himself. Let me finish the first part of the story. So the whole reason I read the poem is, well, in order to critique his analysis and find out if he actually did what he was supposed to, he says, well, you're going to have to read the poem first so you'll know what's going on. Okay, fine. So I read the poem, and I was just expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, but by the end, I was moved almost to tears because I just thought, oh, that is so cool. I can't believe I've never read that before. It was really good. But his analysis of the poem, the first thing he hit on was the repetition, and it says right there in the guidelines that he's supposed to explain what repetition is and then start giving examples of it, and it's a seventh grade analysis. And so he says repetition means repeating words for to emphasize them for effect. Next sentence. Repetition is repeating words to emphasize them for effect. See what I did there? And he was so proud of himself. And it was really effective because not only that, it was that whole paragraph up until the point where he says, see what I did there? He uses the words repeat and repetition so many times. It's like a Busta Rhymes rhythm. It's like, you know how in church when it's just about to get to well, maybe only if you're in Catholic church, I'm sorry. If you happen to have ever gone to a Catholic mass and they get to the handshaking part where they say, peace be with you, and it's like, you can tell it's coming. This is a Dane Cook joke, but it's also true. You can tell it's coming because the priest will start repeating the word peace. Peace be with you. Peace, 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 peace. He repeats it like 100 times.
Cook.
Dane Cook.
I know Dane Cook. It was on Netflix. It was on Netflix for a while.
Yes. Yeah, Dane Cook's been on Netflix. Anyway, this was like that. So, like, you can tell the peace be with you handshake thing is coming because the priest is going to say, like, the word peace like 28 times in two paragraphs. Well, that's what this was for the repetition paragraph, and it was really effective, and it was really funny, and he's very proud of himself, and he should be because it was really cool. So, anyway.
And you're going to figure out words for the last conclusion sentence.
Oh, God, that was tough. All right.
It wasn't.
So, here's the point, is the highwayman is, it has been listed as one of the top poems of all time, the top most effective poems of all time for oral reading, that it is designed to be easy and effective when read out loud. And so therefore, I mean, I would read it out loud right here, but, you know, I'm modest. But if anyone were to ever ask me, you know, like I've been asked to recite the Jabberwocky a couple times on this show. If anyone ever asked me, I would be more than happy to recite it during a listener betrayal or something. Because I love that poem. Man, it would be cool. But, you know, I would be too self-conscious. You know me, I'm modest and shy. And I would be too self-conscious to just come right out and do it by myself. But if someone asked me, yeah, I might. I could do that. All right. Anyway, that is enough of our Nerd Pride book report. Oh, next up. Oh, man, I don't know if I want to do it. It's uncomfortable topics. Yeah, this is usually where I'm talking about politics, maybe politics and religion and who knows what else, but anything that that
you basically just have to cringe.
The kind of stuff that you don't want to talk about at family reunions because you always know that there's the extremists on both sides who are going to turn it into a giant fight.
We see you, Uncle Jim. Stop it. I don't have an Uncle Jim. I am actually explaining another uncle that I don't like speaking.
Right. In this case, the names have been changed to protect the innocent. Yeah, he doesn't actually have an Uncle Jim.
I'm not talking about you, Kyle.
I do have an Uncle Jim, though. Kyle and I have an Uncle Jim.
Is he a jerkwad with politics?
Our dad's brother, I think he's just a liberal. I don't know. I've never talked politics with Uncle Jim, but he's a funny guy. He is, in fact, my Uncle Jim is when I took up juggling in high school.
Yeah,
he gave me a set of juggling clubs, wooden juggling clubs.
Oh, wow!
That were his juggling clubs that he used when he ran away and joined the circus.
He actually joined a circus. He ran away and joined a circus.
He ran away and joined the circus, and he actually rode a unicycle on a high wire while juggling those clubs. That's how talented he was. And
I thought Popo was interesting.
And I loved those juggling clubs. And one night we had a party in our house in college, and somebody stole my clubs. And I was very, very disappointed. It's like literally they were there. And then within a week after the party, I went to go grab them because I was going to juggle. And my clubs were gone.
And then you realize don't go to parties. So,
well, don't have parties in my own house, apparently, because people have no respect whatsoever. That's something you learn.
That's also how you get your wallet stolen.
That's something that Eddie Murphy learned in the movie Trading Places, is that, you know, you can't have a party in your house if you've got nice stuff. Seriously, people got no respect whatsoever. So,
no one,
anyway.
Yeah, I haven't stolen that much.
Okay, but this isn't a discussion about any of that. This is a discussion about uncomfortable topics. So, all right, first off, this one's not so uncomfortable, but apparently Sean Spicer, I've been listening to the podcasts coming out of Crooked Media, and I especially like, I know I mentioned him last week, but I especially like Pod Save America and their newest one, Love It or Leave It, Lovett being John Lovett, one of their guys. And I especially love those two, but they have talked several times about how Sean Spicer, not a bad dude. I mean, look, with this whole, he's got the worst job in America, being Trump's press secretary and having to come out and lie for that man every single day and then have Melissa McCarthy make fun of you on Saturday Night Live every weekend. Oh, yeah, dude deserves everything he's getting. But apparently, prior to taking this job, he was, you know, well-known and well-liked in these political circles that everyone thought he was a decent guy. You know, he was a bit of a camera hound. Like he really liked being on TV. He liked being the center of attention. So he liked being up there in front of the cameras, you know, asking questions, talking to the press. And before this gig, was generally liked by the press. Reporters enjoyed him. He was easy to work with. And now the poor guy has become Sean Spicer, President Trump's tool. And I don't know why he continues at this job. He has to know it's destroying him, and yet he continues doing it. So the guys from Crooked Media, I mean, like I say, they talk about how he used to be such a nice guy. Oh, geez, way to go, Spicy. And then he became this, and so now they spend a lot of time making fun of him because, as one of them said, yeah, he clearly made this Faustian deal, and he's going to suffer for it for the rest of his life. There's no – I mean, everyone knows who Sean Spicer is now, and not because they like him. So, poor dude. I say poor dude. It is his choice. He knows what he's doing, and he knows what he's into. So,
wait, quickly. Is Sean Spicer just that one topic?
Yes. Sean Spicer is just this line number one in uncomfortable topics. He's looking at...
No, okay, because I didn't know if all this dealt with... Okay, now I'm...
The next line that says, damage to our country, no, that is not Sean Spicer. Sean Spicer is only damaging our country in as much as he's following Trump's orders and repeating what Trump says. So, no, the damage to our country from the next line of my notes.
It's something with Trump. About. It's something with Trump. It's something with Trump.
Yes.
It's something
yes,
with
it
Trump.
Is. Look, the damage that the Trump presidency is doing to our nation comes in different levels. And I don't know if I have a point when I get to the end of this, as I often have no idea if I have a point until I get done with it. And then sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. But just to talk about it. Look, the executive orders. The man has shown that he is not going to be able to rally his troops to get legislation passed. It is going to be really tough because now he's decided that he wants to alienate the Freedom Caucus and the Democrats. Well, guess what? The so-called moderate Republicans do not have enough in there to pass any legislation. And you're not going to get, this is the thing. And no matter what he can get through the House, nothing that will pass the House will ever pass the Senate. He can't legislate. He can't bring people together. And so, and the people his lapdogs that he's got working for him are not helping him in any way. Ryan's a bigger tool than Spicy is. I can't stand the man. So here's the deal. He's ruling by executive order right now. The changes that are happening in this country are happening because it's happening by executive order.
And by what Trump wants.
Yeah, which is what it is. An executive order means Trump just signed something and says, this is how we do it now.
This is how we do it.
And let's make no mistake. These executive orders are doing real harm to real people. There is absolutely no doubt about that, especially the immigrant stuff, the climate change stuff. This is horrifying things. This is people who have been in this country legally, and then they go home to whatever their home nation is, and now they're afraid to come back or can't come back. They've been denied at the border. People who already had visas to come for scientific conferences, educational conferences, they're coming here for perfectly legitimate reasons, and now suddenly they're being blocked, even though that's not the way the executive orders are supposed to work.
Oh, and then that one even country's
though,
open for
even
Trump's
though,
country.
Oh, even, yeah, exactly. You know, he only bans countries that he doesn't have business dealings in. But here's the thing is that both of his executive orders on immigration have been struck down, and yet he still has enough power to change how we operate things that he's just changing how we enforce stuff. And so, you guys, people like Nelly. Nelly's here on a green card. And Nelly is married to an American citizen, and she's on a green card.
Wait,
and
what
she
country
is,
did she come from?
Ireland, I believe.
Okay, then she's okay.
She's German, but came from Ireland.
You didn't have to tell me that. That was basically one of those things you have to highlight in the sentence that didn't matter. No,
and Nelly probably will not have any real problems because she's a cute white girl, and therefore they're not going to question her. If she were brown, then it wouldn't matter how legitimate she was. She could be the exact same person in the exact same situation.
If she was brown, it's pretty much they all go gangsta.
If she was of Indian descent or something like that, and even though comes with the exact same credentials, the exact same life history, but happens to be a darker shade, then yeah, she might have problems. But even then, you know, just the fact that she happens to be a white girl and probably won't have any trouble doesn't mean she won't have any trouble. Jesus, I'd be scared if I was her.
They didn't even
that
tell
stuff
us.
Sucks.
So you know that one.
But here's the thing. Some of these executive orders. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to say,
you know, when that terrorist attack happened a while ago with the club thing.
Yes, I know.
Were those white guys who caused it? Because if it was white guys, then why are we blocking off only these?
No, it's not. Here's the thing, is that we do have terrorism in this country that is caused by people who claim to be connected to Muslim organizations. But we also have killings that are going on where it is white people committing terrorist actions and killing people because of their race or religion, and or just the color of their skin. And the press, if it is a brown person who does the killing, the press will label it a terrorist act immediately. If it's a white person doing the killing, then it is just listed as a murder or an attack, and they don't put the word terrorism on it if it's a white person right away.
Although
sometimes
we make every murder a terrorist attack.
Well, no, because it's not. Terrorism has a very specific meaning that we need to keep track of.
I know, but so, it seems like...
But it is unfair to label...
You got to
stop bumping that table every time that thing creaks.
You know the one thing that happened over there, over at that bank that was...
Yeah, here in town?
Should have that been count as terrorism?
No. The five people he's referring to, this was a dozen or more years ago, we had five people murdered at a bank just a few blocks from our house. And that was just a robbery gone wrong. Terrorism would mean that the people who committed it were doing it specifically for some sort of political agenda, religious reasons, or because of racial hatred. But they want to scare people, and they want to – not only are they trying to kill people, but they're killing people to send a message to everybody else. That's terrorism. Terrorism means they want to cause terror among the people. So this one was just a robbery gone wrong.
Is that what America's?
No.
Because I think if we're going, I think blocking off people, telling them that they can't show up and
but that's not. We're not killing people. Real not directly
still
killing
counts
people.
Counts as scary.
But oh yeah,
people.
No. But yes, we absolutely the.
We're as bad as them.
No, we're not. It's not as bad as killing people.
I know.
But we are we are, as a nation, enacting some pretty bleak things right now. Things that can lead to some people dying as a result. There are people who assisted us in Afghanistan and assisted us in Iraq. These are people who lived there, were born there, and they assisted us by providing information. They assisted our soldiers by providing information, by providing translation, and did amazing things for us, and part of the reason, you know, they were willing to help us to do what was right, but now they're in a bunch of danger, and so we promised that, okay, if you help us out, we'll make sure we get you out of the country, and we'll move you and your family to the United States.
And
we'll
then
move
there's
you
that some... slap of the law, and then they get to our country, realizing right. They have to go all the way back.
Right, and now there are people who have been at various stages of this process getting ready to move over here, and now because Trump is president, oh yeah, no, we're stopping that. So no, we're cutting that program off. So these are people who helped us put their lives, their families' lives at risk to do what they thought was right, and now we won't help them out. So we are putting their lives at risk by keeping them out, and we're making sure that next time we have to work somewhere in the country, we're making sure that the locals there are much less likely to help us now because they know the United States will not live up to its promises. And that's horrible for us. That is terrible. A point I was going to make, though, where I was going before I started engaging with my son here, is that some of the stuff that's being rolled back by executive order here, while horrifying, let's also keep in mind that I suspect some of it we're blowing out of proportion on our side of the media in our bubble. I think maybe, I mean, it's not that these aren't terrible things, but look, Trump is rolling back anything that has Obama's name on it. And so some of them, like the Internet Privacy Act, that he's rolling back. So now
that doesn't have Obama's name on it, though.
No, it does. Because if Obama signed it into place, then Trump is taking it back out. That's basically all he's
doing.
No matter what the content is, whether it's good or bad, makes no difference. If Obama signed it in, Trump is taking it back.
Oh, we just have Russia.
No, don't. Here's the deal. The point I'm making is that, like this internet privacy bit, we are all horrified now that, oh my God, Trump is giving permission to all of these companies, to all of these internet service providers, to sell our personal data. And we're all shocked and outraged and horrified that he would be allowing these people to sell our private data. But the thing about it is, he's rolling back something that hasn't taken effect yet. This is something that Obama signed during the last days of his administration. It's not taking an effect until later. And so by rolling it back, actually what Trump is doing is saying they're allowed to continue doing exactly what they've been doing. We're not changing anything. So, yes, it still sucks, and it's still horrifying, but it's not on the same level as, hey, these people have been blocked from doing this, and now suddenly we're going to give it back to them. I mean, that's not one. Look, this one, to me, is, again, I'm worried about my internet privacy. I'm worried about their rights to spy on us, and this does not help anything. But again, we've got to keep in mind that a lot of these, some of these environmental things are, again, environmental stuff that when we just say outright that, oh, he's now given them the right to pollute. Oh, he's now given them the right to do. Well, yeah, but a lot of them hadn't taken effect yet. A lot of them hadn't been signed in until the last days of Obama's administration. I mean, if these things were as universally beloved and good as we say they are, well, why weren't they just passed in legislation? Why weren't they taken care of before this? Well, and of course, they weren't taken care of in legislation because the Republicans were in power and they were obstructionist and all that. I get that. But why is he waiting until the last days of his administration to put some of this stuff in place? Why didn't it get done sooner? Not that it isn't good stuff and not that it isn't stuff that I want and I'm happy for, but I'm worried that if we blow every single little thing up into full outrage mode, because it seems like
everything's a trigger warning.
Everything with Trump is in, you know, raise it to 11 outrage mode. And some of these,
we have less of a
leg to stand on. And so when you're debating people, let's keep it. I mean, like, okay, the ones where Obama put in place the retirement savings programs that cities can invest in retirement savings programs for people. States have the ability to create these retirement savings programs that are better for the states and the cities because it's cheaper to help provide these things, and it's better for people because they'll actually be able to save for retirement. These are very complicated processes that have already been implemented, and now, even though it's already in process, there's people already using these and working with them.
Right.
Now suddenly Congress is rolling that crap back and saying that you know who that helps? Seriously? You know who that helps? Investment bankers. That's it. Nobody else. All right. So those are ones that we should be seriously upset about. All right. Eli is flipping out here, so I'm going to let him talk.
Okay. Now this should be in whatever the thing you're angry about.
Oh, yeah. This is my nerd rage. I can't do nerd rage because Kyle hasn't given me the new soundbite for it, so we won't have any
Kyle,
nerd rage.
Kyle, hurry up with that. Okay. This is my nerd rage. Okay. It's Trump supporters. If there's any... Every Trump supporter, every time they see something about Obama, their eyes go red and start shooting lasers like, oh, God, the world's going to end because Obama's back.
Oh, this, look. Now... To be fair, on our side, every time something comes up about Trump, people flip out. So we're doing the same thing. Now, the difference is that we're right and they're wrong. So therefore, which is, by the way, how they see it. But you got
to... Yeah, but I listen to the Trump stuff. They will just start yelling at you that you're wrong. And you're like, okay, never mind, I'm out.
And you don't?
Well, no, I listen first.
You listen first, then you yell? Eli's awesome to talk about politics with, by the way, guys. That is some of our best conversations, and we do this all the time. He loves politics.
I don't know if I love them or I'm just...
Well, he's certainly passionate and motivated when it comes to the topic.
Because half the other people I talk to.
But okay. So where did I go from there? All right. I've gone there, executive orders. Internet privacy. Okay, that's just the executive orders. Those, at least, with executive orders, and even with some of the legislation stuff that does get through, this is stuff that can be turned around by a new president, which means, yeah, we got to hold out for 4 years, but it could be turned around by a new president, or some of the things can be fixed in legislation or turned around in legislation in 2018, 2020, if assuming that we get a Democrat majority in the House and Senate, which is not a guarantee. But, you know, these are things that can be turned around. It'll be damage, and some of it is horrible damage. I mean, again, some of these are things that affect people's lives. There are people's lives and livelihoods, well-being at stake. as a result of some of these, but most of it, God, at least we can unravel that a little bit. Far more insidious, far more worrying to me is the damage to our democratic institutions. I mean, Trump has successfully attacked and, demoralized and, denigrated. I'm looking for another word that is basically, it's working, that people no longer have the same respect for our free press that they used to. And granted, that was already on the decline, but man, he made sure that is accelerated.
Just warning you, I'm playing games, because half the conversation I'm kind of...
No, that's fine. I don't care. You can play games. Dude, if you want to pitch in, you pitch in.
I'll keep my trigger on.
The free press, the integrity of our electoral process. Oh, that's one of the worst. The idea that there is zero voter fraud going on. And when I say zero, I mean statistically zero. It's like literally enough cases that it, no matter what level of accuracy you want to go to, it still rounds to zero. That's how solid our electoral process is that our votes are good. The counts are good. We know what we're doing. And yet, in spite of that, a huge chunk of the United States, and I mean like a good 40% of people in the United States, if not half, think that our electoral process is broken, that it is compromised, that there is extensive voter fraud, that people actually believe that. It's not, even though there's no evidence, none whatsoever, and people already believed some of that. There was already some of that to a degree. But,
oh my God, it's Jacob!
Oh, Jacob's home. Okay, Jacob just came home.
Sorry about
that. Say hi, Jacob.
Hi, Jacob.
Awesome. He's so cute. You guys should see. He's grown his hair out. He's all pretty. He's just great.
He is.
You're just here for the day?
Yeah. Maybe not long.
Okay, go say hi to your mom, and then you can come back and join us if you want to. All right, Jake's home. So anyway, the point I was making is the damage to our free press, the damage to our electoral process, people's faith in government in general, which again, all of these are things that had already been slipping to a degree, but Jesus, did we just accelerate it? That we suddenly made it mainstream to believe that 3 million fraudulent votes were cast for Hillary Clinton, that the press is fake news, it's mainstream now. The damage that has been done to the belief in science and truth in this country, that's the part that most upsets me. The rest of it is stuff that, yes, it's terrible, but we can roll those back. I mean, those are things that we can come together as people have.
Thanks.
Yeah, people have been coming together and speaking up, and it is influencing our government. The people's voices are being heard, not as much as we need.
Quickly, you know what scares me?
What scares you?
When people tell me in school that I would be good at politics because of my morals and how much I can speak against and be actual reasonable about some stuff, but...
Well, I wouldn't say you've been reasonable, but...
Yeah, but
you are passionate, and yes, I think you could do well if that was...
Yeah, but I'm not going
to
do it.
If that was a thing you chose to do...
I got other things I want to do in life.
That's fine. But if it was a thing you chose to do, I think you'd be awesome at it. Those are, like I say, the laws, the executive orders, God, they're terrible. But we can fix those.
Just
all right?
Like my dad's
if
farts.
The people speak up, yeah, just put in a fan. The farts go away. If the people speak up and work together and make our voices heard in the elections, those we can fix. It's these other things that, oh, it's going to be a long time. It's going to be the fact that we've allowed or uncovered this resurgence of racism and hate that we didn't even, a lot of us ignorantly did not realize was so pervasive and hidden right below the surface. That these are all things that it's going to take decades to work out. We'll get the first part, but man, this stuff is going to be harder. And hey, you want me to end on a scary note? Because if this didn't bring you down enough,
America's going to end at some point.
Well, at some point we all end. But no, what I'm most worried about is international relations. The thing I'm most worried about is that Trump is not staffing any of the executive offices. He has not hired the people required. You know why Sean Spicer's having such a tough time? Because he doesn't have a staff. He doesn't have the people. If you listen to people who've done the job before, who've been there and watched it happen, the president's press secretary has a staff of 20, 30, 40 people whose whole job is to watch the news and watch the press and be informed on the president's policy and opinions.
Have true information.
And when a, yeah, and when a press secretary hits that podium, they have all of the things prepared and it's being fed to them through a little earpiece if they need it. And they've got the papers in front of them. So any question that that press might ask, reasonably might ask about the day's news, about things going on, about that, he's got an answer ready for them. And if he doesn't have an answer ready for them, he has a deflection ready to be able to say, well, I'll have to get back to you on that. Hey, I'll send you. Where Sean Spicer has no, doesn't have those people. No one's preparing him. He's winging it. He's standing out there winging it every day. That is a nightmare. That is unconscionable. And it's not just Sean Spicer and the press secretary. It is our entire State Department. It is so many executive offices and executive departments that simply don't have people there doing the day-to-day of making that organization run. Our State Department has been cut to the bone. This is international relations, right? This is not, it's one thing to watch Sean Spicer get up there in front of the world and make a fool of himself and our president and this country. But it's another thing when we have an international incident and we don't have a State Department anymore. When something happens, when North Korea actually launches a real missile at somebody, probably,
and is successful.
Probably an uninhabited island that is someone else's property.
Or they hit the, or they hit a meteor and actually save Earth. That's our theory, me and my friend theory, that they're going to hit a meteor and save Earth.
That's, oh my God, that's the best story ever.
I'm going to write
North,
it up,
North Korea's entire process has been just to protect us from an incoming asteroid that was going to destroy the planet. And somehow they've never told anybody what they're doing or why.
Because, it turns out the country's all alright. It was just a prank, bro.
Because the ruling family has always had it in their thing that they want to be the heroes and that they want to be the ones that save the world. And the only way they can do it is by developing a nuclear program, developing a rocket program, and not telling the rest of the world what they're doing. Because otherwise some bigger nation will get this asteroid and take our credit. And so therefore, oh man, wouldn't that be brilliant? And so all their resources have been devoting to saving the Earth for generations. And then it finally happens.
And it turns out they were the cult.
That is brilliant, Eli.
I'm going to write a book now called.
Do it. Write that story because that's brilliant.
No, what would be the name? I need a name.
I don't care what the name is.
No, I need a name that is really funny. That you.
It's, I would go with Kim Jong Hero.
Kim Jong Hero.
So, all right. But no, what happens when North Korea fires a missile at some uninhabited island that is owned by South Korea or owned by Russia or Japan and actually hits something and detonates a missile? How do we react to that? What's the proper response? I don't know what the proper response is. When there is a terrorist attack that kills 600 people in our nation, all right? What's the proper response? I don't know. I don't know the details. I don't know what the response is. But I do know that I would much rather have teams of people who've trained their whole lives to handle international politics and international incidents, providing advice to a president and an organization that listens to their words, listens to the facts and opinions provided by professionals, as opposed to when shit goes down, Donald J. Trump will be playing it by ear and he will react from his gut, and he is an angry and spontaneous man who will do some stupid, stupid shit. And that's...
You're squeezing my foot.
That's the part. I'm holding on to Eli's foot as I'm talking, and apparently the more heated I get, the tighter I squeeze. I was really hurting his toes there.
Yeah, I don't know if you realize.
No, I had no idea.
Your fingers were squeezing my toes because I looked at him like, oh, my toes are hurting. They're purple. I'm like, yeah, Dad.
I'm sorry about that. So, that's the part that scares me.
It is like he's a spontaneous man.
Look, the damage to our institutions has been done, and it's going to keep happening
the damage to our electoral reputation, our free press, science, truth, beauty, justice. Oh God, it's all the damage has been done, and it's going to continue to fester for a while, and then slowly things will start to get better. That process is a long
one. Someone else has voted in for
Trump's idiot executive orders, the horrible legislation that they're passing, those are things that we can fix ultimately. But man, if when we have an international incident, that's some stuff we might not be able to come back from. That's the ones that scare me. So all the rest I have hope for. And I just got my fingers crossed that, Jesus, can we just last until either he's impeached or 4 years is up or attack or I don't know what's going to happen.
The joke we made. Yeah, one law we should have just done is let Obama be president for another 4 years. All of us would have been fine.
Yeah, Obama had his flaws as well, but Obama was a far better president than Trump by a long shot. Okay, I'm done with uncomfortable topics.
That was a long one.
Yeah, I know. And
I should have set a timer when we started.
Well, we're over an hour into the show now, which means I actually did have some nerd rage.
Yes!
But and I also had
And I probably took that up.
And I also have a science corner. But I'm going to skip the science corner. And should I go into the nerd rage or should I save
nerd
that?
Nerd rage.
Okay.
Nerd rage.
Well, I don't know if you're going to like it. Look, here's my rage. I'm sorry. Hold on. Wait. Uh-oh. Get the little ones out of the room and make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, "Rrr!"
That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. Okay, now we're here. My nerd rage this week is on purebred dogs. The more I know about purebred dogs and the system that we have for creating them, the more I can't stand it. Just can't stand it. There are some good dogs out there, good purebred dogs out there.
What about Sammy?
But there are...
Sammy!
Yeah, Sam, you can't see my finger quotes, but my quote-unquote purebred Boston, who is not a purebred by any stretch. That dog is messed up.
But at least we could have gotten him into it.
But he's adorable.
And he's a smart dog.
Yeah, he's smart and he's adorable, but he is not a purebred. He's broken in a couple of ways.
At least we could have gotten him into a dog show.
But here's the thing. There's so many genetic issues that run in certain dog lines, and this whole purebred AKC certified process that we subscribe to just exacerbates that and makes it worse. And they've tried to install fixes. Exacerbate, that means make worse.
Okay.
It's a problem. And California, I can't remember if it's all of California or if it was just Hollywood or if it was, I think it was all of California, but I can't remember. You're not allowed to, pet stores are not allowed to sell anything except shelter dogs now.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound cool? Now, it does
that's
seem...
That's where we got our kitten.
Right. He's a shelter cat.
He's a beautiful kitten.
But the idea is, now this is a knock against free markets in that, look, if I've got a product to sell and it's a legal product because puppy mills can still create dogs, you can still have your purebred breeders, you can still... And people, those people can still keep breeding dogs and keep selling dogs. They just can't sell them at pet stores, which is where lots of people go to find a dog. We're taking a swing at the free market process here. You're going to have to stop hitting that table.
Sorry. It's so,
I know. So easy.
I sit in a
so, position. But part of me cheers and says, yeah, but we should be doing shelter dogs because there are so many shelter dogs and they're such good dogs. There's so many good ones out there that's what people should be doing. But I'm looking at the purebreds, and again, there's all these genetic problems with them. There are lines like the French Bulldog that can no longer have puppies naturally. If we left them alone in the wild, they'd all just die out because they're big ass heads won't fit through those narrow little hips, and the only way a French Bulldog can be born is by C-section, which is part of why they're so expensive, is that every single one of them is born after the mom goes through surgery and we cut her open and we get some puppies out. That's just horrifying. This trend of breeding smaller and smaller dogs. I don't know if you know this, but AKC recognizes three different sizes, and the smallest of those sizes is toy. All right, there's miniature, and then there's toy. And toy is the smallest breed of dog that's recognized, although everyone knows that they sell teacups. You can get teacup poodles. Ooh, isn't that adorable? Even smaller than toy. Yeah, you know how they get teacups? Do you? Yeah, they take the runts that normally would have died off anyway. They take the runts and they nurture them and they save them and then they breed runts to other runts. And so these are genetic.
That's evil.
These are genetically flawed dogs. Yeah, if they live long enough to be bred. Genetically flawed dogs that.
No joking.
Are
quickly,
tiny.
Quickly.
What?
Lori, my friend's ex-mom, brings a dog sometimes that they babysit, which is one of those small little poodles, and she is dumb.
Oh, yeah.
She is a dumb dog.
They wind up being stupider. They are less healthy. And what I didn't know until just this week is that teacup dogs, these so-called teacup dogs, have an average lifespan of 3 to 4 years maximum. Oh, my God. Dogs live 12 years. Dogs live 18 years.
They're one of the most, that's like
a good healthy line of dog will have dogs that on average are living, 12 to 15 years. And that's normal. But because of the breeding processes for these teacup dogs, they have an average lifespan of 3 or 4 years. That's crazy. Absolutely crazy. And here's the problem. Here's the problem. When you see them, you see a picture of one of them on Facebook, you see a picture of one of them online, your gut reaction is, oh, they're so cute, I want one.
In reality, they're barking and being annoying.
In reality, they are genetic monsters. They are grotesque, horrifying monsters that we need to stop creating. And I bring it up because someone on my Facebook feed posted up a picture of what is now known as a micro teacup dog. And the micro teacup is, oh my God, we've gotten teacups to breed and now we've taken the runt teacups and bred them to the other runt teacups and we've made an even smaller, more hideously deformed dog that, oh, by the way, fits neatly in the palm of your hand. You could probably hold 4 of them in one hand when you got these little things. They're just little, oh my God. And so she posts a picture of it, of this micro teacup. And again, the first reaction is, oh my God, it's so cute. I need one of these. And everybody who responds to it, oh, that's adorable. Oh my God. No, quit it. Quit fawning over those dogs. When you see a teeny tiny dog, just know the horrors that have gone into making that one animal.
What happens if it's the koala?
How many of them have resulted in unsellable monsters that have to be just put down? How many of those have God, it's just a nightmare. Yes.
Quickly, chihuahuas. They don't put them on the kill list. Don't put them on the kill list.
No, chihuahuas are okay.
They fight back because they know what you're doing.
You can have chihuahuas that are decent dogs.
Yeah.
Chihuahua is a perfectly valid Kyle's line of dog. Dogs. Yeah, there are great dogs they're great chihuahuas out there, but there is this tendency to want to breed the teacup chihuahuas, the little teeny tiny chihuahuas, to make them smaller just like the others. And all of these, all of these animals, once you get down to teacup size, again, we're in a position where they all have to be born by C-section and there's so many things wrong with it, and people are paying thousands of dollars to buy genetic garbage dogs.
Really, Dad, you had to pause because of a coughing fit?
Yeah, well, otherwise I have to cough right in their ears. They hate that.
Well, just do well, what Pat doesn't chew on food at the
that's
mic.
Right. I don't know that you guys hate it when I cough in your ears. So the times I have accidentally coughed on Mike, do you guys prefer that or would you rather I hit pause?
Everybody coughs on themselves.
See, they all just raise their hands. They say they want me to pause it when I'm coughing because that's disgusting.
You cough on Mike, you cough on yourself.
Oh, God, you're funny. Okay.
I'm more pedantic
anyway,
than you, Dad.
That's the end of my nerd rage. I will save my science for next week. And now it's time for the Pod-O-Matic.
Not copyrighted.
Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I will add it to my Podomatic list. Podomatic is about whatever you want it to be. And here, Eli, I got a question for you.
Okay, what?
No, this isn't a Podomatic question. This is actually, I should have done this before the Podomatic.
Why?
Do you like being on the podcast?
Yeah, it just matters on my mood.
Yeah, I get that. Okay. When we're on mic, when we're talking on the podcast, do I treat you unfairly?
Okay, question quickly. Who is the one who asked on your podcast?
No, nobody asked. I'm asking.
Okay, so no one's on the hit list. So, okay, next.
Yeah, my question is, because sometimes when I listen back to the podcast, because I listen to all of them the next day so I can make sure, you know, if there's problems that need to be sorted out, whatever. And when I listen back, I sometimes feel like when I have you kids on, I feel like sometimes I kind of cut you off or I dismiss you. Like, you're making a point.
But this is your podcast. It's not my podcast.
I know. But I feel like I'm making a point, but and so then you guys start talking and I'm so caught up in the next thing that I want to say that I feel like I just kind of dismiss you guys.
You see why I'm staying quiet? Because if I talk too much, it gets boring.
That's not true. People love it when you talk. They really do. Oh, they do. They love it when you talk. They love it when Aiden talks. They love it when Noah talks. Jacob isn't around enough, but no, people enjoy it. So here's the deal. Is that this episode in particular, since you've been sitting here, I've been trying to catch myself because, like I say, I get to thinking about what it is that I want to say. And so I feel like I kind of dismiss your point because, oh, I need to get my own stuff out there right now. And then when I listen to it back, I'm like, oh, crap. I didn't even pay attention. He was going to say something really interesting there, and I didn't explore it. So I've been trying to be better about it today. But if I ever do that, don't be afraid to assert yourself and come back in, which, by the way, I think today you did quite a lot. There were times where I would cut you off and change the subject, and then you would come right back, and you would talk about the exact same thing because you had an important point to say, which I think was great. So I really enjoyed that. But again, we'll see. I'll listen back to it tomorrow. We'll see if that actually plays out. Maybe it's just a jumbled mess.
Maybe you take out every time I talk.
That's right. Tomorrow I'm just going to release the edited version with Eli completely missing. It'll be like Garfield without Garfield. You guys will think I'm a crazy person. It'll be great. But the number I rolled was 63.
Garfield would have been better without Garfield.
63 is, well, here's the thing is when you take Garfield out of the Garfield comic, all that's left is John talking to himself and he looks like a crazy man. It is a comic strip about a poor lonely man who's slowly going insane. Yeah. It's really funny. All right. Number 63 is from Daz, and Daz says, so there's a rumor that Rey is really Anakin. What other weird predictions about Star Wars 8 have you heard? Rey is really Anakin? No,
that's dumb. Sorry to say.
Not even close. Not even a reincarnated version of it. Not even a, no. Rey is not Anakin. Rey is Rey. To make her Anakin would be to cheapen her role as the first female lead for Star Wars. I mean, is it possible that there's some kind of tie-in like that? Maybe, but I don't think it's going to happen. Weird predictions about Star Wars 8. I try and keep away from speculation. Just like, I don't like knowing spoilers. I don't like watching trailers. I don't want to hear people's speculation about it. So, I mean, the best I can say is the idea that I've heard that, Snoke is actually going to turn out to be the Emperor, what if Jar Jar was the ultimate Sith Lord?
Yes, exactly.
I've seen that one. So that, you know, maybe Jar Jar is going to turn out to be Snoke in the end or that, you know, but I haven't really paid too much attention because again, I don't want to know, but Rey being Anakin, I doubt it. Number 10. And 10 comes from, there it is. It's from Kaz. My buddy Kaz. Kaz says.
Do you have the last question, or who was that last one?
That was from Daz.
Daz, Kaz?
Yes, Daz and Kaz. That's just how it works.
Are they brothers?
No, I don't even think they know each other. All right, Kaz says, the zombies are at the door. What's the closest object to you right now that you can use to defend yourself? All right, first off, the First object to use to defend yourself?
Cat tower. We got cat tower. You throw it at the zombies, crush it against the door, or use the door itself.
All right, cat tower is not bad. I was going to say, since it's closest at hand, your mug that you just knocked over and dumped coffee onto my phone because you're an asshole.
I'm not.
You kind of are. anyway, your mug, he's got one of those heavy insulated mugs with a handle on it that I think would be great for bludgeoning the crap out of somebody. Not great for, you know, decapitating zombies, maybe, but it's not bad. I mean, but, you know, hey, we've got chairs. We've got, oh, wow. I've got my weed whacker right over there. It happens to be in the living room, leaning
okay,
in the corner
Dad,
right now.
You're going
to
show up in my book that I'm creating with a weed whacker.
So, well, here's the thing, is that I can go ahead and attack zombies with a weed whacker, but only for as far as my extension cord will go. So, no, I'm kidding. It's a cordless. I could put it on battery mode. I'll be fine.
And batteries are everywhere in this apocalypse.
That's the best I've got, though. 17. 17 is...
Dad, sometimes I believe you have no laughter because you've been quite laughing at, like, the exact... So, you have to do the next question.
Oh, that is so unfair.
Instead of having to edit it, like...
So all my laughter is fake? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Ha, I say to you. Ha ha. Huh, shows what he knows. All right, number three. This is 17, and 17 comes from Kyle. Kyle says, it's an eating contest between you and me. No veggies, just steak and mashed potatoes. The winner is the one that eats the most.
And milk. Kill Kyle.
Who wins? Oh. Between me and you? Dude, we're always built almost exactly the same. Steak and mashed potatoes, which are both things that you can eat. So therefore, man... I'm going to give it to you because you're just a little bit taller than I am, so you're built just a little bit larger. So I'm going to give you that barest advantage. But, man, it would be close. It would be super close. So, hey, Jacob, how are you? You want to do a Pot-O-Matic?
Sure.
All right, hold on. 90. Number 90 is from... Let's see. I got it right. There it is. 90 is from my friend Kaz again. And Kaz says... Hot ones, hot wings, and even hotter questions. What are the hottest wings? Oh, yes.
Dude, I love hot wings.
What are the hottest wings you have ever eaten? And then I'll handle part two of the question. So, Jacob, you got to get in on the mic. But what are the hottest wings you've ever eaten?
I haven't had too many, like, terribly hot wings, to be honest. I do eat a lot of wings. Generally, when I go to restaurants and they have wings, I generally order the hottest that they have, but I haven't had any that have, like, left me rolling on the floor. I have had, like, spicy foods and whatever.
All right, what is the hottest dish you've ever eaten from a restaurant?
I have one.
All right, what do you got? Go ahead, Gideon.
I think this counts as a restaurant. Burger King. One time they had these spicy fries coming out that were unbelievably spicy. They even had a warning on the box.
Yes, Burger King counts as a restaurant. I know you can't tell from their food, but it does.
Red Robin's had a really, really hot burger that I tried out. A family friend used to own like a food joint / gas station. Oh, and they just, for a while, they had death sauce. I don't know if you've ever heard of, like, mega death sauce or whatever, but...
Hot?
Super hot. It's, like, lots of ghost peppers and whatever, and it is known as one of the hottest sauces on Earth. So there was one day that I went into their place, and... He was telling me all about it, and he was, like, hamming it up, and he's like, tell you what, we'll split a mega death sauce burger together. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So we piled everything spicy they had behind the counter on top of it as well as the mega death sauce. And both of us decided we'd try to race to see who could finish it first. And that was a terrible idea and a good idea at the same time, because the faster you eat it, the less time you have to process how horribly painful it is. And man, the initial eating of it was pretty dang bad, but when I really regretted it was like four hours later.
Oh, God, that is the worst. The absolute worst. And then, now, you got to remember, Jacob has eaten raw ghost peppers and hurt himself really badly doing it, but he loves the spicy food. So he is, of all my kids, he has the greatest tolerance for heat.
The reference in his question there, Hot Ones, have you ever watched Hot Ones?
No, I have no idea what that is.
Hot Ones is a series on YouTube where a guy interviews people while eating progressively hotter and hotter hot wings. And it's spectacular. Go ahead and look up Hot Ones on YouTube. I would...
Okay, I'm putting it on my list because I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, it's so good.
Because then, when can we see Pariah powered by Fate? Oh, that is a great question.
I don't know this question.
Pariah is a game that I wrote for Rogue Publishing way back, and it was powered by Fudge at the time. But now that I own it, because she quit publishing it, and so therefore the rights reverted to me, I now own Pariah, and I can put it out with the same set of rules if I want, or I could use that setting and that basic framework and adapt it to some other game system, because I don't think I would leave it at Fudge. I would rather put it in something more closely related to my story system, or something like Fate, or something. I would rather do that. And so, I don't know. I've actually, can't even tell you. Probably never. Never is probably my best guess, but, we'll see. We'll see. That's a great question. All right. Last one. And then we're all done. This one is 92. That didn't go very far. 92. Oh, F. Mary Kill. It's, oh, I'm sorry. Wait, no. It's Bed, Wed, or Behead. Thank you, Emily. That was Aiden's friend Emily suggested Bed, Wed, or Behead instead of F. Mary Kill, because I never say the F part. So Bed, Wed, or Behead. Our three choices are Angela Merkel, Janet Yellen, and Madeleine Albright. All that power is going to make it a tough choice. Okay, Stan. Oh, this, did I say it was from Stan? Because it is from Stan. Alright, Janet Yellen, I need a refresher on because I'm not picturing her.
Yeah, so. All I got is Madeleine Albright.
Okay. Angela Merkel is the current, leader of Germany.
Gotcha.
All right. Janet Yellen is, is an American economist. Chair of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System. Uh-huh. Got it. Okay, then that would make her very powerful. So anyway, Janet Yellen, and then there's a picture of Janet if you need her.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. And then Angela Merkel. I'll show you a picture of her. And that's Angela Merkel.
Oh, yeah. I've seen her.
Who has since Trump is not stepping up to the plate, some consider her now to be the true leader of the free world. So, wow. Bed, Wed, or Behead. Those three. Boy, Madeleine Albright is getting up there, but I've always liked Madeleine Albright. She's the one I've known the longest, and I would marry Madeleine Albright. I would take Angela Merkel to bed, and then I would kill Janet Yellen because she's the one that I didn't know off the top of my head when we started this. So there, that's my guess. You got anything to mix that up? Yes. Jacob, or having to choose between old ladies is not really working for you? All right, he's going to stammer about it. So, all right, no, that's fine. That's fine. I'll take it. And that's a great way to end this. So, you know what? I'm going to turn this over to GLaDOS, and she's going to give us a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
"No way."
And then I was all, "We pretended we were going to murder you."
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Wonderful World by Sam Cooke and Read a Book by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network, Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to it, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use. Write us a nice 5-star review. Those things really make a difference for us. But to be completely honest, if you want to do something nice for this podcast, the very best way you can help us out is recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, spread the word and let other people enjoy it, because word of mouth, it's my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. My contact info, mike@nerdprideradio, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together and become best friends in the world. Not kidding. We'll have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my Facebook page, I go out to my forums, I post up, hey guys, I am recording anything you want, post it here, and I'll read it at the end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. Hold on, Noah's singing something. Oh, he's got a friend outside who's waiting for him to come out and play, so he's actually in a really good mood. I went out to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and there's no response. No one's willing to betray me there. So instead, I come over to Facebook, and Facebook is clearly where the party is this week. Oh, there goes Noah. And, oh, he's out. Okay. And here on Facebook, it opens up with Sarah Beth, and Sarah Beth says, discussion in the Dark's house. Pat says, that's DM Dark's, Pat says, the science for next year is infectious disease. Sarah Beth replies, yes, awesome. Pat says, this means we need to buy plushies, because he's referring, of course, to giant microbial plushies. Sarah Beth, I was just thinking the same thing. And then she concludes by saying, nerd love is the best love. That's pretty awesome. You guys are nerds. So then Nellie says, I'm sick. I'm sick with the flu. Cheer me up. Oh, my God. Did you not just read that last story? That's great. Hold on. Other people are here to cheer her up for me. It's Sarah Beth. Sarah Beth says, aw, here's a picture of Pat in a tiny fedora. Aw. Yep, that'll work. Let's see. Do I have anything I can use to cheer her up right now? Probably not. Darn it. I'll have to look up some stuff and post it there. Ron says, hi, Mike. How awesome is Aiden? Oh, Aiden is so awesome. So, except that now we have his crappy car back. But other than that, that's not his fault. That was my fault. No, Aiden's doing great. He's pretty cool. And then, last one. Ron says, if you had a week of free time with no obligations, but also no way of doing anything aside from reading, so a week to just read, would you reread a book that you love, or would you go for something new? All right, in either case, what books? More than likely, if I had a week of nothing to do but read, I would read some new stuff. I mean, I do enjoy rereading books, on occasion, but, I would go for something new, definitely. And again, I mentioned to you guys last time, I'm just about to start on the Percy Jackson books. In fact, I think I can start on the first one because Noah just finished it for class. He finished the first one for class. Lisa's on like book 3 or something. But Noah just finished the first one. So now if he's done, I can go ahead and take it from him and I can start reading that one. But that's kids' books. I actually need to start reading adult books. And I've got a stack of books in my room. Some of them are kids' books. Some of them are adult books. But I've got a stack of stuff in there and I don't even know what I've got. So I would start with Percy Jackson, just because that's the one I've been thinking of, and I know I'll enjoy it. And then I will move on to, and when I say stack, I mean like four. There's like four books in there waiting for me to read that I've gotten as gifts or that I picked up from somewhere and keep meaning to read but haven't yet. So I'll get started on those. That's what I would do. So there you go. And that's it. The last thing is me saying done. So we are all done for the week. Thank you so much for being here, guys. I don't care what Jack's film says. I still love you. So it has been awesome. You guys are great. Thank you for helping me and contributing and putting in all this stuff here. Otherwise, say goodnight, Eli.
Goodnight.
Say goodnight, R2. We're out.